Thanks so much for spending some of your time with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, talking about the dairy industry a little bit with you today. The dairy industry produces tons of non-food residue, and a new project from the Wisconsin Energy Institute is finding ways to turn that waste into something useful. A couple of guests for you. One is Victor Ujo. Victor is an assistant professor of food science in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Victor, welcome.
Thank you very much, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, with us as well, back once again, he's been with us many times over the years, Tim Donahue, director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute at UW-Madison. Tim, good to have you back as well.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to be back.
We'll talk about their efforts to support farmers and improve environmental sustainability, and I hope you'll join in. Maybe you're a dairy farmer and have a comment. How are you reducing agricultural waste on your farm? Have a consumer question? I hope you'll join in as well. And you can do that by calling 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Victor, I think I know what you're talking about when we talk about non-food residue, but maybe I don't. Victor, what is non-food residue in your mind?
Well, when we use the term non-food residue, we're referring largely to the waste that are produced from yogurt and cheese production. Ultimately, when you produce cheese or yogurt, most of the milk doesn't, especially cheese, doesn't go to cheese production. Only about 10% of that goes actually to making the cheese itself, and about 90% goes to whey, and that is what we call whey. There are applications for whey, but for a state like Wisconsin, we're generating tons and tons of it in millions, so to speak. So we need to find ways to convert that to real products that can serve farmers. And currently, farmers either have to dry that down, which costs a lot of money, or they have to send that to waste management companies, which will send that to landfill or anaerobic digestion. And either way, it costs farmers a lot of money. So our goal is to find applications that will actually add to the farmer's bottom line as opposed to taking money out of their pocket.
Yeah, that makes sense. And whey is spelled W-H-E-Y. Am I right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Tim, the Energy Institute... let's talk about that new project that that's out there that's meant to benefit the industry, as Victor was saying. Tell us about it.
So this is a natural extension of things that have been going on in the Energy Institute for over a decade now, and the vision is that Wisconsin and other states in the Midwest and around the country are holders of a lot of organic material that is not suitable for use in food. And why not convert those materials into valuable products for farmers and communities so that they can benefit from those instead of paying someone, as Victor said, to haul them away, putting them on the land that can create other unwanted environmental issues, and go to a place where we have a more decarbonized, sustainable society so that local money from them.
So... you mentioned the environment, I know that has been spread on agricultural lands and so forth. Is that what you're talking about when you're saying a negative effect on the environment?
Yeah. So there are examples where the use of these materials to spread on the land has some significant agronomic benefit, but if not controlled very carefully, they can release phosphorus or excess nitrogen into the land that produces unwanted negative environmental impacts. The phosphorus runoff in the groundwater contaminates lakes and leads to blooms of algae that we deal with every summer, not right now because the lakes are frozen. And the excess nitrogen that might be put into the soil can be converted by microbes into nitrous oxide, which is one of the most potent greenhouse gases. So we're trying to both make value for farmers and industries and mitigate one of the largest environmental problems facing society today.
Yeah. Well, Victor, maybe you could walk us through this process of converting dairy waste into useful products. And I guess what kind of products are you talking about here that you've been thinking about? And what's that process like?
Well, simply put it, microorganisms are experts when it comes to using organic materials. And what whey contains is a lot of lactose, which is a sugar that microorganisms love. So what we're trying to do is to deploy that lactose as a resource for microorganisms to produce two different compounds. One is a lactate, the other one is a succinate. I won't go too much into the chemistry of that, but simply put it, these are chemical compounds that have wide ranging applications for making bioplastics, for making food processing. They're also used in a lot of pharmaceutical applications and things like that. So they have massive, massive applications. For instance, lactate has a market value of over $2.9 billion, and the succinate market is worth over $250 million currently. So these have huge applications. You're not looking to make something and then try to figure out how to use it. We're trying to make things that actually have existing market applications. So if we can make them from whey, we can plug that into existing market. So these are the two major compounds we're looking to produce, and we're using microorganisms. That process is called fermentation and genetic engineering. So fermentation is simply using the organisms, taking the molecules and trying to optimize the system to produce compounds. Also, succinate, for instance, is so important that it became commercialized using microorganisms to make them a few years ago, but currently there isn't any plant out there producing succinate using the biological route. And the reason for this is that the price of oil has dropped over the last 10 years, and as a result, using microorganisms to make that is not very economical anymore because oil is cheaper. However, we know that oil prices are rising now, but most importantly, we also see the fact that if you're using something cheaper to make the succinate, that means you can actually drive down the cost of production. And whey being a waste material has less economic value as it stands, so that's something we can convert to a final high-value product. But most importantly, if you look at it from a cumulative standpoint, the farmers actually generate this and get money out of it. So we're trying to make two compounds, lactate and succinate, using microorganisms. Bioprocess is called fermentation, and we're using genetic engineering to enhance the ability of some of these organisms to make most of these compounds we're interested in.
So let's say you've got a million pounds of whey. What percentage of that whey would be become useful in the fashions you're talking about?
Well, in the fashion we're talking about, we would look to use just about every amount of that whey to be able to make the product. So the organisms will use most of that if you're putting all that into the process. So of course, there are other applications of whey. We're not looking to stop that entirely, but we're producing too much of it. So what we're trying to do is to look at that excess fraction that comes into the market. The farmers and cheesemakers don't know what to do. We're trying to use that. So you may be looking at about 80% or 70% of the whey generated within the state can be applied to this process. And microorganisms are really experts in using these sort of organic residues to make final products.
Interesting. Well, Tim, where are you getting the dairy to test this research?
Well, as I just want to pick up on what Victor said.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Make the point that the dairy industry is a fermentation industry. Microbes in the cow rumen make the milk. We process a lot of dairy into milk that consumers drink. But we also process a huge amount of it into cheese and into yogurt. And that's fermentation. You make cheese by fermentation. You make yogurt by fermentation. And we're just taking the residual materials that would normally be disposed of by the dairy co-op when they process milk, or the yogurt makers or the cheese makers when they get whey, and feeding it to other microbes to do a fermentation. So in fact, I have heard people say that Wisconsin could be thought of as the Saudi Arabia of the United States when it comes to having access to billions of metric tons of dairy residues every year to convert into valuable products for the industry and communities and farmers that will sell those products to the co-ops and the industries. So this is not us taking milk products out of the food chain for consumers. This is us upgrading them into valuable things that they can increase their profit margins on.
And that oxinate, and is it lactate, the other one? I forgot.
Lactate. So if you go to the market and you pick up a white plastic milk jug, that can be made out of polymerized lactic acid, so polylactate. So that's one source. Succinate is another potential source for renewable fuels and other plastics that we currently get from petroleum. So why not make states like Wisconsin and other dairy states around the country, even California, where the cows aren't as happy as Wisconsin cows, into producers of these materials instead of importing them from other parts of the U.S. and around the world?
I think it sounds like a pretty darn good idea to me anyway. Victor Ujo is an assistant professor of food science in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Tim Donahue is director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute at UW-Madison. It serves as the collaborative home of energy research and education. Questions or comments, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Courtney Everett, our producer today, Trita LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we take a look at the Wisconsin Energy Institute Dairy Project with our two guests, Victor Ujo, assistant professor of food science at UW-Madison and the College of Ag and Life Sciences, and also Tim Donahue, directs the Wisconsin Energy Institute at UW-Madison. Again, questions, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@WPR.org. Tim, I imagine the Wisconsin dairy industry stakeholders, I think they should feel good about this effort. What kind of reaction are you getting?
So, Larry, that's a great question. You may have said things that make it sound like this was a brilliant idea of mine, and I'd like to take credit for it, but in fact, it was the dairy industry that first came to us when they heard about things going on in the Energy Institute and other residues that we're creating from non-food material, and said, can you do something to help us? And so we listened, and we now have managed to get, I would say, seed funding, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm dealing with crops, but funding to start this research from the National Dairy Council. We have some funding from the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, both in general from their home resources and something called the Dairy Innovation Hub that was a state of Wisconsin initiative. and the Vice Chancellor for Research and Graduate Education on campus partnered with the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, or WARF, and awarded Victor and I and a colleague, Dan Nagira, some seed funding to do this, to promote industry-university collaboration as a way of activating what we often call about on campus, talk about on campus, the Wisconsin idea, doing research that really is going to have a positive economic and societal benefit on people in the state of Wisconsin and around the United States. So we're starting to see a lot of broad interest in what we're doing, and that's really exciting to Victor and I.
I would imagine so. Jeff, who's in the Upper Peninsula, or the UP, as we say, in Michigan, we'll give you a chance to join in. Jeff, thank you for calling.
Yes, I had a question about what is the current standard practice for disposing of these excess materials, and if they are redirected, is there another product that's needed to replace the benefits that they were serving?
Ah. Thank you. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Victor, you want to jump in on that one?
I believe he was asking his question says, what was the current practice in terms of how to make whey, right?
And yes, and then he's saying the current practices, is something going to be lost if we switch away from those practices to what you're talking about?
All right. Before I go further, I'd like to mention that nothing is going to be lost by switching to what we are trying to do. We're not taking food away from society. We're not taking money away from farmers. We're not taking resources away from farmers and cheesemakers. That's the very most important thing we're trying to achieve, is actually to work cooperatively with them to solve energy problems. Currently, there are several things that cheesemakers and farmers do to treat their whey. The first thing is that they can send it to a company who will likely send it to a landfill. Or they can send it to a company that will treat it using a process called anaerobic digestion, which breaks it down to produce methane gas, which could be converted to the electricity or natural gas. Also, they can spray that on the field, depending on how much they have license to spray on the field. If you look at all these practices, they have downsides to them. Like Tim said a while ago, if you spray that on the field, you're most likely going to have excess of that being converted to phosphate and ammonia, which is a nitrogen source, and that influences excess growth of algae, which leads to excess algae bloom in the summer. On the other hand, if you do put that in landfill, you are definitely enhancing the possibility of all these compounds I mentioned, nitrogen, ammonia, being formed, and that could leach into groundwater system as well. Anaerobic digestion works well, but the problem with that for farmers is that it still costs the money to do that. But most importantly, you also create a waste at the end of anaerobic digestion that also is not easy to manage because it's full of ammonia and phosphate. So what we're trying to do here is to actually conscript these nutrients in the whey and feed that to microorganisms and have them make a very high-value compound. If you think about lactate and succinate we're talking about, they have much higher value than natural gas produces anaerobic digestion. Not to say that anaerobic digestion is not a good process. It's an excellent process, but we're looking at the high value for the waste that comes out of the dairy industry. So overall, what we're trying to do is not take food or resources away from farmers and cheese makers. On the contrary, it's going to add value to them. Because think about waste, they produce that waste, they have to send it to somebody or spray it on the field. But if they can repurpose it by selling it to somebody at a lower price, but cumulatively they're making more money from the way they generate, that will add value to the farmer and the chip maker. And that's why they've come to us, and that's why we're trying to work with them to find solutions for it.
Yeah. Tim, anything to add there?
No, I think Victor has hit it out of the park. Just one thing I would possibly add is the following. The compounds that where Victor has mentioned are chemically very similar to the compounds we get in these residues. They currently come from petroleum, and so why not take what Mother Nature has already given us in these compounds and use them as precursors to make into valuable products instead of converting them into natural gas, which is a low value, chemically distant process. And actual natural gas right now is pretty cheap. So that's another reason why you'll see people running anaerobic digesters, a living at the margin. These products that we make, that we're talking about, they're in high demand, they're chemically similar to what's in the residues, and they have a higher value than the current use of these residues.
I'm wondering, and we'll get to Vernon Eau Claire in just a second, but I'm wondering if the current companies that are, you know, doing this process, can they be converted, or will this be new companies that would be formed?
So why don't I start on that and then pass it off to Victor. Again, I want to come back to a point I made before. This is a fermentation. A cheese manufacturing industry knows how to do fermentation. A yogurt manufacturer knows how to do fermentation. This would be the equivalent of bolting an addition onto a current manufacturing plant. Mm. The fermentations would not necessarily be that different. Think about, I grew up on the East Coast. Think about the Vermont farmhouses or even the Wisconsin farmhouses where as a family got larger and they needed to accommodate new children or grandchildren working on the farm, they bolted on an addition on to what was grandma and grandpa's farmhouse. This is the same as that, where an existing plant would bolt on a facility to deal with the residue and convert it on site into a product. That makes sense because then they get the value from local residue. They don't have to ship it somewhere. If you had to ship it somewhere else, there's a shipping cost that eats into your profit margin.
Oh, yeah, that makes really good sense. Victor, anything to add there?
I think Tim really covered that very well. Ultimately, if you can make something out of whey and farmers already know how to do fermentation, they can easily reconfigure their system to have an added product so they can do that. Probably as a co-op, as you have a group of farmers within the same areas, can have a plant that serves them. Because the ultimate thing is that you want to use whey fresh. The longer you keep it, the more it's broken down by microorganisms. So shipping is not going to be ideal. There's also a possibility that some companies are already experts at making some of these compounds might see the need to partner with farmers and cheesemakers by setting up their plants in Wisconsin to work with a group of farmers in the areas where they don't have to ship those for too long or too far, so they can use them within that area as well to make the same product. So either way, it's definitely going to serve the community within the state.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's go to Vern in Eau Claire. Vern, what's on your mind?
Oh, we're talking about this whey business. They used to come in the rivers. But here's the thing. They took it out of Philadelphia cream cheese and generic cream cheese. That was the protein. What China does, they import whey and they feed it to their hogs because it makes excellent hog feed. So that's I don't know whether they dry it to get it there or what, but there's a tremendous demand for whey. But like I said, when you take it out of cream cheese, you take the protein out.
Yeah.
You do away with the protein.
Well, thanks for calling. Tim, maybe I have you comment and then Victor as well.
Yeah, he's absolutely correct. And some of this material will likely continue to go for those uses. I will come back to a point that Victor and I made before. We are drowning in these residues in states like Wisconsin and elsewhere in the United States. If people want to pay top dollar for them and ship them overseas, we should do it. But we will still have billions of metric tons of these materials that we generate every year. And there isn't a market for every pound of those billions of metric tons. So we're trying to come up with other uses for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Victor, anything to add, or I'll go on to another caller?
Yeah, I think it's easy to think that it's what we're trying to do might take away from what farmers already do. But if you talk to people that work in the industry closely, especially larger operations, as Tim said, we are drowning in this waste residue. Yes, you can dry it. It takes a lot of money as well to dry it down and send it to China. But if we can do this locally, first of all, you're contributing to the local economy. You're contributing to farmers. You're creating jobs. But most importantly, you're also finding a cheaper way to do it. And what we're trying to do will not stop these practices of sending it to China or elsewhere to feed us, but we're producing way more than the capacity that those applications can handle right now.
Makes sense. Okay, Arnold in Osceola, we go to you. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I've been farming a long time, since over 70 years, and I've never seen it so bad. Now the children don't get good milk. My grandson is sitting on the couch by me. He says, I don't like the milk. I want to go back to Japan where I get good milk. He starts to cry. He says, this year 2% is better than we were getting, but it still don't give me enough energy to run on track. And I like track, but I want to go back.
Yeah, well, so we're taking the fat out of the milk. That's a sort of an aside question, but Tim, a comment?
The fat and the protein that was mentioned by the previous caller are major components in these residues that we're drowning in, in addition to the lactose, depending on whether we're talking about milk permeates or whey. We have a mixture either of lactose which is a sugar that we've talked about so far, or protein or fat. And we are bound and determined to try and use fermentation to convert them into valuable products for people. We are not talking about driving society away from whole milk and more towards 2% or 1% or no fat, as the gentleman is referring to with his grandchild. But there are a lot of residues that we are, quite frankly, bullish on to be able to convert into valuable products by fermentation that are excess as we currently process dairy milk as it comes from the cow today.
Yeah. And Victor, anything to add there?
I think Tim covered that very well.
Well, Arnold, I thank you very much for calling. And again, you can join in too with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you want to email us, you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Is this process, this fermentation process, before we go back to the phones, is that you're researching it now and trying to figure out how expensive it's going to be and can it be done efficiently? That's sort of the process for the research, isn't it, Victor?
Yes, absolutely. It's not a new thing. Fermentation has been around for a long time, and that's been started a while ago. The dairy industry is really has the expertise in this area. Fermentation, cheese making is fermentation, yogurt production is fermentation. We're simply trying to extend it by using the waste that comes out of these processes. And ultimately, we want to find easier and cheaper ways to do it. We can make lactate using microorganisms, but can we find a way to cheaply produce lactate from whey using the ideal microorganisms? That's what we're looking at. We can produce succinate using microorganisms, but can we produce enough as cheaply as possible? So it goes down to the fundamentals of the process, the microorganisms you're using, how they react with whey, lactose, how they grow, how fast they grow, how quickly they can make the product you want. All of these things will add to what we call productivity and yield. Can we make fast enough, quickly enough, as much as possible, using as much whey as possible, or as less whey as possible, so to speak, so we can maximize our yield? So we are just trying to improve the process as much as possible in a combination of fermentation and also looking at some of the limitations that these organisms that make these compounds naturally have. And then we can use some of the molecular or genetic tools we have to be able to optimize the pathways so they can easily use factors to make product more interesting.
Let's take another call. Helen in Lake Delton will give you a chance. Hi, Helen.
Hi there, Larry, and to your guests. Almost from the first words that were said, my first thought was, why has it taken so long to discover this when you think about all the metric tons of waste that's been wasted and not necessarily put where it is doing much good? But I haven't heard anybody say anything where the farmer is going to profit from this. And if the farmer is producing so much milk that after they make their yogurt and their cheese and whatever fermented products, that they have tons of it to either ship away or pour out on our land, is the farmer going to recognize any improvement in his income, in her and his income? Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. Tim, we'll start with you.
Sure. So why don't I try? That's an excellent question. Helen, I believe it was, right,
yeah.
Larry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So again, I'm a microbiologist, but let me try the following. The compounds that Victor has mentioned, lactate and succinate so far, are not compounds that he's pulled out of the thin air and saying, I want to make this. And then if you make this, the industry will come. There's an old baseball movie that I love called Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come, right? These are compounds amongst a variety of compounds that we've already evaluated that we could make, that we believe there's a market pull for at a good price. And so if we can make them, we believe the industry will value them, and the industry will then be able to pay the farmer a higher price for their 100-weight milk that they get from the cows. If we make the wrong compounds and there's no interest in them, the industry will not value those compounds, will not be able to sell them, and the price per 100-weight will not change. But if we can make high value, high demand compounds, the industry should be paying the farmer more for 100-weight of milk as it comes out of the cow, or pay the co-op, and the co-op ultimately reimburses the farmer based on what they can sell their liquid to for downstream processing. That's my understanding of the economics.
Okay. Anything to add there, Victor?
Yeah, I'd like to tell a quick story. I used to go to the McDonald's restaurant to collect waste oil for the project with my students. Then one day I got there and the manager said, I'm sorry, we can't give you this stuff anymore. And I was like, but why? It's waste. He said, no, we sell it. The company that gives us good money for that now. So I thought, uh-oh. So I had to plead with him to give me just a little bit, about half of what I had in mind to collect that day. So I think the same thing applies the way here. If someone walks up to a farmer and says, this stuff you put on the farm or send to someone else and pay them to collect it from you, and typically we can give you this amount of money for this amount of it, I think it changes the game right there for the farmer. And I think that definitely the two products we're talking about have massive, massive applications. Most of the ventilators we're talking about today are made from plastics because it's biologically safe. You need something that does not harm humans to make ventilators. It has a massive application for that right now. And going down the road, we're looking for ways to make plastics that are not going to linger too much in the environment. So the application is there, the market is there, and industry is willing to go right into this if we can make this very cheap. So it's been done before with Tucsonate. We're just trying to revitalize the industry in a way that will favor the farmers directly.
Let's take another call. Curtis in Red Cliff, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Unfortunately, I only am catching just a little bit of the show on my way home for lunch. But currently, My wife and I own the Copper Crow Distillery here in Red Cliff, and we're the first native-owned distillery in the United States. And we are using whey permeate that we get from Burnett Dairy Co-op to make vodka and gin.
Ah.
We've also teamed up. We figured out how to do it, but we've teamed up with the UW system at Stout in Menominee to aid us in making that fermentation more efficient.
Well, that is very cool. Comment, Tim?
Well, you know, I'd love to come and get some of your fermentation products someday. It would be my first comment. People often ask me, what do you view as success? And I will say, well, in the other part of my world where we're making replacements for gasoline, that, you know, will the success will look like going to a Rose Bowl game on fuel that we figured out how to make in the Wisconsin Energy Institute. In this case, it's heading into a gin mill and finding a bottle of locally produced alcohol from whey. But that's exactly the point. There is a market for that. There may not be a market for that that's as big as some other large vodka or gin producer in the globe, you know, Tito's or something else. But there are people who want and will value paying for locally produced material. And more power to you but for doing that. It's another example of fermentation. And I think I speak for many of my colleagues. We want to see a day where there's a variety of products made from these residues. And if some of them are things that go in the Bloody Marys or other cocktails, that's great. Other things could go into plastics. It's called diversifying the use of these residues.
There we go. That's great, Curtis. Thank you so much for that call. Just to wind up, how soon could we see this research come to fruition on the market? Victor,
All right. Well, we just started the project this January. We're hoping that over the next 2 years, we'll have results that will definitely be a roadmap for us to look at how to improve on the process going forward. So what we're doing now is purely to engineer the organisms that will make this. We're hoping in the next few years we'll have organisms that can make this to be able to spark some form of a commercial interest in fermentation lactic production going forward. So can't say that in 2 years we're going to have the product on the market, but we'll definitely have a clear roadmap as to where to go from there within the next year.
That sounds very positive. Couple of years,
I would agree with that, Larry. I would say Victor knows he and the people in our group gave a couple of presentations at some recent dairy fora in the U.S. and in Wisconsin, and I've had a lot of phone calls with cheese and yogurt producers who are willing to offer us up residues to look at. And they understand the fermentation business, and they're really excited about this. They also know another important part of the business much better than I do, and that is how you take this fermentation liquor and separate out the products that the industry is going to need to use to go forward. So we're really excited about partnering with them on taking what we know how to do best and then working with them on what they know how to do best down the road.
Well, it's a really positive thing and pretty exciting. And Victor and Tim, thank you both so much for taking time to be with us today. Hopefully we'll get an update from you guys down the road. Appreciate your time very much. Victor Ujo. Yeah, well, thank you. Victor
and
Ujo.
This was great.
Yeah, and I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone. Victor Ujo is Assistant Professor of Food Science in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Tim Donahue directs the Wisconsin Energy Institute at UW-Madison. It serves as the collaborative home of Energy Research and Education at UW. Great to have them with us. Well, we got a couple of other UW folks joining us next. Our weather guys are going to be talking about, well, what do you think? They're going to be talking about the weather. And they have some data and some things to share with us about cold winter temperatures. Larry Mueller here for the Ideas Network.